Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We're going to have a wonderful program today. I would like you to join us and my guest for this next half hour. We're going to be talking with Deacon George Sartor of the Archdiocese of Hartford. And this program, of course, goes over among the stations is WJMJ. And so it has particular relevance to the Archdiocese. I'm delighted to have one of their deacons with us today. Before I officially welcome George and we begin our topic, I'd like to turn to you, as I always do, and ask you to give us some information. And even before doing that, I have to tell you that my co-host, Dorothy Riera, could not be with us today, so we're going to kind of wing it as best we can on my own. What I'd like you to, again, is to ask you to consider thinking about contacting us if you wish. Maybe you have a particular area you'd like to talk about, a particular topic or theme you'd like us to investigate. You know, this happens sometimes. Just sitting there and saying, I wish I knew more about this, or, wow, all the stuff going on, I'd like someone to, who might be an expert, to really kind of provide more and more information. Just let us know. You can do that. At least I'm going to give you two particular methods, two pathways to us. One is just to write us a normal letter. We could put a stamp on a letter and address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. Again, that's 06836. And if you prefer emailing us, that's quite possible too. Please send us your email comments at clemens10@aol.com. Once again, that's to Clemens, that's C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at AOL.com. I'd like to invite you, if you're on the computer, right after you send us that email, feel free to go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today, and you can find that at this website, spirituality.org. That's spirituality.org. And while you're on that website, you'll notice that among the articles and features you could look at, we also have available to you, usually a number of programs, you have Thoughts for the Week, our radio show that you can listen to. This at your convenience. So now the time has come is to officially welcome you, George, to Thoughts for the Week. Delighted to have you with us.
Thank you, Father. Great to be here.
And the world of the deacon is many faceted. And I think perhaps beginning to expand and open up. But for George, I'd like you, you know, perhaps I know we've covered some of this territory before, but I think our listeners would like to know a little bit about your own background and how you decided to enter or pursue the diaconate.
Yeah, I just had a friend who's a deacon, and the first deacon I had really known, except when I was growing up, there were deacons at St. Mary's Church in Milford, which was my home parish, where I grew up, you know, since I was about 5 years old. And we had some of the first deacons in the archdiocese there, but they were all kind of old guys, if you will, Father.
Wait a minute now.
My parents' age, I had trouble relating to them. I knew them, but I had trouble relating to them. But there was a guy a little bit closer to my age who was in my parish at the time, St. Agnes in Milford, and we got to be good friends, and I said, boy, he's a great guy. I want to be more like him. Deacon Nick Genovese, I want to be more like him. Mm-hmm. So I kind of followed him around a little bit, helped him out serving confirmation classes, taught 7th, 8th grade religious ed, and slowly but surely I got the support of our pastor, Father Callahan, and finally he said, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and write you that letter to let you do that. Then my wife asked me, as I mentioned to you before, my wife said, so did you hear the call? And I said, no, I didn't hear a call. I don't know what you mean by the call. But I did have a feeling that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to serve in some way. And I needed some guidance as to how I was to do that. And the diaconate, it wasn't easy. The first time I tried to apply, they said, no, thank you. We're closing the program down temporarily. And I had another wait another year. And then finally it opened up and attended the meetings. And And I thought I had it all worked out, Father, but it was much, much different than I thought, and it was better than I could have imagined.
Mm-hmm. What did you find, in talking about your preparation, again, many aspects to that. Mm-hmm. What did you find of particular interest from the academic point of view and perhaps from the spiritual growth point of view?
The studies of Scripture was very, very interesting for me. You know, you read the Bible, and you listen to the readings on at Mass on Sunday. You listen to the homily, and all that kind of stuff was always interesting to me. And I would read the Bible on my own for many, many years as an adult. But then when you got into biblical studies and the Scripture studies, mm-hmm. we really got very, very deep. We got into the minds of the authors who we believe wrote those books, Old Testament and New. And then when we started doing theology, moral theology, and then Christology, it became much more challenging for me because I've never really taken any kind of philosophy classes in school. And so some of it was that too, in the theology, the spiritual theology, a moral theology, as I said, it was a challenge. It was a challenge because I'm not a great student. I did well, but it was a lot of hard work, and a lot of challenges for me just to sit for more than 20 minutes and read a book. Mm-hmm. So I did, but I rose to the challenge. I was fortunate. I had tremendous support from my wife Monica. So tremendous support from my family, who just, in a way of supporting, it was not like they were always there for me. They left me alone sometimes. Mm. And you need some alone time, right, when you're studying and so forth.
You know, I can see, especially now when I was going through the seminary, I mean, that was my job, the seminary.
Right.
You know, you had another, you were working, supporting your family, mm-hmm. dealing with raising family mm-hmm. and marriage and all the rest of it. I mean, I really, really admired those efforts. You had that on top of your studies. And you mentioned, and now the support you said was really appreciated, mm-hmm. giving you the time you needed mm-hmm. to study and to work. Yeah.
It's kind of a juggling act because my number one vocation is being a husband and a mm-hmm. father. And our children were about in high school when we started, when I started going through it. They were in high school. And my daughter was about, I think maybe my daughter's about ready to start college, if I remember. But it was. I had a full-time job.
Yeah.
I had to leave work early because my boss at the time, he allowed me to do that. He understood the challenges of working all day long and then trying to do your homework for that class or two that you're taking, and then also trying to make it to all the events that the kids are going to, you know, plays and concerts at the school, helping out my mom and dad when they need it. My mom and dad are still going strong, but they need more and more help as time went on. It was more of a challenge. My in-laws challenged. My father-in-law was ill at the time, and so all these things, normal everyday things that every American goes through, and every married couple goes through. Mm. Pile on a whole bunch of other stuff to that, and then you get a taste of what it's like. It's like working a second job. It really is, because it's not just going to the 2 or 3 hour classes once a week. We had Saturday workshops. We had weekend retreats. We had to go on. We had studies. We had book reports, you might say, papers and writing and reading and conferences and homiletics classes, and where you had to prepare for that. And so it's a lot. It really is. And I think they're even preparing the guys more vigorously nowadays than it was. And I've only been ordained for 9 years, but it's even more strenuous for them. So I'm encouraged by, and I support these guys that are in the program now, because they're probably under more stress than I was.
Mm. You know, I'm wondering, and I want to get to this before I end up having the program end and never really providing this information for our listeners, and that is those who may be interested in learning more about the whole program, the diaconate program. Mm-hmm. How do they learn more?
Well, the first step would be talk to your pastor. Sit down with your priest and talk to him about it, because if you know your priest and you're active, they're not even, any diocese is not even going to consider a man unless he's had some years of activity in the parish, being a reader, being an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion, being active in a men's group, being active in some way.
So, first, right off the bat, there's that awareness that mm-hmm. you've been participating mm-hmm. More than simply going right. to Mass and other types of things, but participating more in parish life
right.
itself. So that there's kind of a little draw there.
There is. I mean, you should really be there. And it's not like a kid applying to colleges and wants to pad their resume with service projects, you know, and it looks good to the administration of the college you want to get. Yeah. No, this is something that should already be a part of you. Mm-hmm. It should be a part of, and we need to be, we should feel some kind of a draw to the vocation. Mm-hmm. So activity in the parish, because it comes naturally to you. Not that it's not going to be a challenge and be, mm-hmm. it's not always going to be easy. But we got to rise to that challenge. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is talk to your pastor. Mm-hmm. Most pastors will have some good insight because you've been active. Mm-hmm. He's going to know who you are. He's going to see your activity. He's going to see how you deal with people. He gets to know you. My pastor knew me very well. Mm-hmm. He baptized both of my children. Mm-hmm. We were there in the parish for 20 years. And he said yes. He said yes to me. You can't get into it. You have to get a recommendation by a pastor. Mm. That'd be the thing. If you're a married man, and there are some men who are ordained who are not married. Of course, canon law states that a man who is single, not married, and ordained then cannot be married. Mm. And a man who is married and is ordained, and then if, God forbid, his wife passes away, he may not remarry. Mm. He may marry once, as it says. Mm. So you got to get permission from your wife, guys, if you're thinking about this. And actually, in the program, the wife must give her consent in writing, and it must be looked at and it's filed. So there's been sometimes a guy feels drawn to it, but his wife, his spouse is saying, I don't know if it's the right time for me to do this. We have young children, or we have some transitional things in our lives. And so it's important that a married man should be working with his wife, and they should be on the same page, at least. Sometimes wives don't want to get involved in the studies. They're welcome to. I'm sure it's the same way in Bridgeport as it is in Hartford and other dioceses. The wives are encouraged to participate, not so that they can get the grades, but it's a great learning opportunity. Mm. If they choose to, and other ones just give their blessing, and they allow their husband to go and do that, and while they will do their own thing, and that's perfectly acceptable too. Mm. But family support is essential. So you're active in the parish. You get your you talk to your wife, and she says, if you're married, she says, yeah, well, I think you should do this. You get the approval of your pastor, and you kind of feel him out. And then the next step really is the inquiry into the diocese and asking every diocese has a diaconate formation director or program. Mm. And that would be the next step. I just look for a bro. I asked him to send me a brochure, which doesn't tell you a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It gives an over, like any brochure would. Mm-hmm. But then I just signed up to go to the meetings. And yeah, if you're married, you must be with your wife because, again, she's given permission the whole time. And and that's where it all started for me, going to the first meeting.
What about the person who is drawn to the diaconate, but within that draw mm-hmm. is their own vocational, professional work? They mm-hmm. feel, well, maybe I'm in communications, or maybe mm-hmm. I'm mm-hmm. a psychiatrist, psychologist, something like that. I really want to pursue the diaconate, serve in the church, but I really also want to bring to the mm-hmm. church mm-hmm. my professionalism.
And I think you can see that more and more, as we said. They're asking deacons sometimes to consider, if they're qualified, to be administrators mm-hmm. in parishes. Also, chaplains in hospitals, chaplains in prisons and jails. We all had to go through some practicums out there. You might even call it apostolate, going out there in prison ministry, hospital ministry, campus ministry. I was at Southern Connecticut State University for mine, and I was at the Whaley Avenue Jail in New Haven for several months to learn that and just learn about it anyway. To get out there, so there's many different ministries that can be used, and we talk about a lot. My wife and I do marriage preparation. We talk about we do it together. We've been doing it for many years, and we talk a lot about vocation. We talk about the vocation to the priesthood, to the diaconate. There's also a vocation to marriage. It's a vocation that and my wife is a nurse. She's a great nurse, and she has a vocation to be a nurse too. We have a vocation to be parents and like I said, wives and husbands. So in our lives, we have many ways we can go. We can use we can see these different activities. Being an engineer, being a salesman, being a pharmacist. These can all be vocations in which we express our Christian faith. We express our Catholic faith to the world one on one. We can't run away. That the whole thing about the new evangelization, a deacon is uniquely positioned. We're one step in the secular world and one step in the spiritual world, one step in the church and one step, in the clergy and one step in the laity. We're uniquely positioned to be able to attract people, relate to people who have lived the same kinds of experiences that we have. We see that as a great draw to the diaconate. And also a great asset we can have to the church.
What I also see, and because I realize in the life of the priest versus the life of the layperson, that there is a gulf, as it were, because the lived experiences are somewhat different. Granted, priests who are coming in later on in life may be coming in with business administration experiences and other types of experiences. In a way, I could almost see how your life in your life as a deacon provides a real spiritual bridge for others. They see you able to live a deeper spiritual life and be involved with the secular world. When I think about preaching every morning and talking to the people, and we're all there early in the morning. We're saying our morning mass, and you're sending them out, you're always encouraging them to try to make their faith visible, make the Lord visible, in the way that you basically do what you do, act in the way that you move it. But you really are tied very, very closely to that. Do you see some bit of a difference when you are functioning as ordained deacon versus as a Catholic who happens to be an ordained deacon working in the world? That's a convoluted question.
But it's a good question, and I think in a way, yeah, there is a difference. I don't conduct myself any differently when I'm at work or when I'm at home or when I'm, although there are certain sensibilities that you have to be aware of at work. You have to be in tune with the shop talk. I work in a factory. I work with 100 and something people, and that there's what we call shop talk. You have to be in tune with that. You can't be offended by it, Father. You really can't. You need to relate to these people in the world. It's not the same. You don't speak the same way you do in a factory as you do when you're preaching Sunday morning. You can't. When I'm at home, they all know me very well. In fact, they got me figured out at home. sometimes you hope that the people in the parish don't figure you out because the familiarity breeds contempt, you might say. But there is a certain thing. People they know I'm a father, they know I'm a husband, and so someone loses their 18-month-old daughter, dies in her sleep. I baptized her a year before, and you baptize so many children. You can't, and if the parents, they're not coming back to church, you don't know who they are really. And then suddenly you get a call from a friend saying that, this person needs you. And I say, you sure you don't want to talk to the pastor? No, they want to talk to you. You baptize their daughter, and they want you to try to help them make sense of this tragic, this worst thing that could possibly happen in their lives. And then you walk, you take them by the hand, and you cry together, you laugh together, and they can relate to you because you've been through some of the things that they've been through. You know, someone's husband is stricken with a disease. That person decides that they want to relate to you. You're married. You can kind of relate. You know, a gentleman has cancer, and he's single, and he doesn't know if he can relate to the priest, but he's seen you up at the ambo. He's seen you preach. He's seen you greet people after Mass. He sees you at the dinners. You know, he sees you at breakfast with Santa, you know, all those other things. And he says, I think he's the guy I want to talk to. Mm. Right or wrong, deacons are not better than anyone else. We are the same as everyone else. We have our, we're human beings. But sometimes people might feel a little more comfortable. But what I tell people when they come to me and they say, you know, I don't want to talk to Father because he can understand. I say, don't be so sure. Mm. Father was a little boy one time. Father has a mother. Father has brothers and sisters. He has nieces and nephews. He's probably dated when he was a kid, too. He has life experiences that you should not discount. And also, Father has insight in the spiritual nature of what you're looking for that maybe I don't have. So Father is also, he can work with you with what the ideal is, because that's his training, what the ideal is. So don't discount. Go talk to Father if I'm not there for you. Talk to Father, because don't discount Father's input, because I go to Father for things. I go to my pastor if I have issues. So I encourage everyone to do that. So I would never, ever say, come to the deacon. We'll take care of everything. No, go to Father. And if Father can't help you, then come. Or go to both of us. Or go to the one that you choose. But don't discount the fact that we need our pastors. We need our priests. We depend on them. We rely on you, Father. As parishioners and as Catholics, we need you. We need your sacramental ministry, and we need your insight and your training, that you've had such extensive training that most deacons don't have.
You know, you were mentioning, maybe it tied into the many years I spent as a hospital chaplain, too. Also in the area of being with people who are suffering a loss, the grief, with a sort of a different trend going on in regard to death. It's not sort of the, here's your wake. Oh, my gosh, when I was ordained, it was, you know, might be a three-night wake.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then you'd have the Mass and then go to the cemetery. Now, what I see more and more is that there is no wake.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or you have a cremation where they're going to have a Mass sometimes weeks after the the death, or just they're going to have something at the cost might be involved there too.
Yes,
just simply a wake service. Mm-hmm. A service is going to be the only thing. Now, you may be the primary person with that.
Yeah.
I presume you've done.
Yeah, I just did one the other day. In fact, a funeral in the funeral home. It was probably last Thursday. Funeral in the funeral home. They're not church going people. They but for some reason they want. They want the church there, and sometimes, and the deacon, a lot of times deacons are there to do these kinds of things, the wakes. So anyway, yeah, I do several of them. A lot of weddings are not being done with Masses anymore. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad, but no. So the deacon can do that. The deacon can do a wedding outside of Mass. Mm-hmm. We're preparing them usually for marriage preparation anyway. We know the couple. We get intimate with them. My wife and I, like I said, do it together. So we know these things. And so they feel comfortable again coming to us. But, it is kind of sad, because now the church is, you know, we respect people. It used to be the people who come to the church.
Mm-hmm.
Now the church is going out to the people more. Mm-hmm. That's what Pope Francis wants us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Go out, have those church doors open. Not so that people will come in necessarily, but so that the people inside the church will go out and evangelize and go out to where the people are.
Mm-hmm. You know, now, the world of technology, where you begin to wonder, and really, the young are concerned, and the people in the world of technology are becoming more concerned mm-hmm. that the person-to-person connection mm-hmm. is really maybe in jeopardy, and it's going to be like you and this artificial intelligence they got to deal mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. in some ways, or with a machine that you have to deal with and relate to.
Sure.
And yet the diocese, I know Diocese of Bridgeport, and mm-hmm. I know the Archdiocese Hartford was way ahead mm-hmm. in using media.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have or do you use in your parish work, or what type of media do you use in your parish work?
Well, now the Archbishop, you know, when he wants to talk to everyone, he doesn't have to go to each parish. He can do put a video on a CD, mm-hmm. and every parish in the Archdiocese can see it. I'm a big user of the new media, blogs and podcasts and video and all those kinds of things. That's where I get most of my best material, Father. Bishop Robert Barron out in California.
Oh, sure.
It's wonderful. There's so many different sites. But you have to use some discretion, and you have to really be discerning about who you're going to take your information from.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a credible. Catholic Answers is an incredible source for me mm-hmm. as well. But the new media is very important. Media is not bad. Electronic media is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. What people use it for can be bad sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The material world is not good or bad. It is what it is, and it's how we use it. So mm-hmm. it's a tremendous opportunity for evangelization.
When you work in the parish, and when it is person to person,
mm-hmm.
Do people understand? Sometimes, maybe early on, mm-hmm. they had that understanding. Well, let me see. You're almost a priest. You
mm-hmm.
can do everything but say Mass and hear confessions. You can't anoint
right.
Because there might be confession involved mm-hmm. there. But that's the wrong understanding.
Right. Well,
what should person understand as, here is a deacon, this is what I do?
Mm-hmm.
As a permanent deacon,
right? We're not priest light. It's a separate, different ministry. Really,
locale priest.
Yeah, it's a separate ministry, and it's still evolving, Father. It's still mm-hmm. developing as mm-hmm. the church's understanding of what a deacon is. So what it is we're a separate ministry. Yeah, we can do some of the things that the priests do, but we are here to serve. We're servants. And we're here to talk, and we're here to do those sacramental things that we can do. But it is a separate ministry, it really is, separate ordination.
Mm. So we would recommend that anyone who is considering or thinks that something's going on within
mm-hmm.
their spiritual life that might be drawn to the diaconate, to contact the parish priest, the parish pastor, the
mm-hmm.
first thing to do.
I would.
And they'll guide you after that.
Yes.
And
yes,
but we have been speaking with Deacon George Sartor, and I am just so delighted to have had you here on this program. Thank you so much for being with us on Thoughts for the Week. And we ask, I may make bold to ask you, our listeners, to pray for our deacons. It's tough getting to where they are. It's tough trying to live that life of that's great spiritual life from dimensions of the workplace, from dimensions of their work as priests. And rather deacons, and we simply give our prayers to you. God bless. Take good care.
Thank you, Father.